Let's face it, you don't need to be a saint to make great music, but that doesn't mean your music gives you the right to act like a monster. It's probably fair to say that Johnny Cash did not treat women well. In 2007, Cash's first wife, Vivian Liberto, published I Walk the Line, a heartbreaking tell-all detailing the dark side of their marriage. Liberto wrote that she continued to love her husband even through his addiction and his affair with June Carter. It was Vivian who gave Cash four daughters, raised them, and stuck with him through the worst of his arrests. Years later, though, Johnny would give all the credit to June.
She may have been the person responsible for me still being alive, she and God.
Behind closed doors, June Carter didn't have it much easier, in spite of the storybook romance performed for the public. Biographer Robert Hilborn says he was stunned when he found out Cash had cheated on her when she was pregnant with her son. There were many women involved in Cash's extramarital affairs, but the most painful was doubtless June's own sister, Anita. Meanwhile, John Carter has often talked about his parents' less-than-perfect marriage. He even once suggested that his mother's own addiction stemmed from a near-constant fear that Cash would cheat again. A fear spread to their son, too, who grew up well aware that his family could fall apart at any time. When Aerosmith frontman Steven Tyler wrote his 2011 memoir, Does the Noise in My Head Bother You?, he talked a bit about his early girlfriend, Julia Holcomb. Tyler explained that he had once nicknamed her Little Bo Peep and said they liked to get it on in public, but he left out a lot of the other details. Hoping to clear the air about her relationship with Tyler, Holcomb took to LifeSite in 2011 to tell her own side of the story. According to her, she was a 16-year-old from a broken family when she met Tyler. They began the relationship in earnest when her troubled mother signed documents making Tyler her legal guardian. Holcomb says she was already pregnant by the time he asked her to marry him, and plans for a family fell apart when his grandmother refused to pass on her ring. 5 months into the pregnancy, Holcomb was trapped in a house fire and sent to the hospital, where she says Tyler convinced her to have an abortion. By that point, though, their relationship was unsalvageable, as Tyler had already moved on to other women. Holcomb left him and returned to her parents, while Tyler returned to the rock star life. CeeLo Green hit a serious rough patch in 2012 and 2013. His trouble began when he was accused of giving a woman ecstasy and later raping her. Green ultimately pleaded no contest to the drug felony and got 3 years of probation along with 45 days of community service. The rape charges simply went away, as Green's lawyer argued that there was no proof the act hadn't been consensual.
He is a very popular celebrity in Los Angeles. The prosecutor has to consider that because the jury is going to like CeeLo Green.
Soon after, Green took to Twitter to voice his opinions on rape in general. He wrote, "People who have really been raped remember. If someone has passed out, they're not even with you consciously. So with implies consent." Green deleted these tweets during the backlash that followed. He later apologized, insisting that he'd never condone the harm of any women. Despite his hippie image, John Lennon often left broken people in his wake. For example, he abandoned his first son, Julian, when the boy was only 5. As Julian himself has said, Lennon pretty much disowned him, giving his mother, Cynthia, just enough money for school and clothes and not a penny more. In some ways, though, Lennon's abandonment of Julian may have been a blessing in disguise. While he was still with Cynthia, Lennon would verbally abuse the boy over the slightest mistakes, and often left piles of drugs lying around the house. He also had a string of affairs, a practice he carried over to his marriage with Yoko Ono, although Ono doesn't seem to have minded. Perhaps worst of all, though, was Lennon's admission in a 1980 Playboy interview that he used to sometimes hit the women in his life. Elvis Presley was 21 when Heartbreak Hotel took him to the big time. After that, the king of rock and roll seemed pretty much unstoppable. Of course, with fame and fortune came the admiration of countless women. Yet, according to biographer Joel Williamson, there was one particular kind of girl that Elvis liked. The right age to be a so-called Elvis girl was 14. When the 22-year-old megastar went on those early tours, he took along his own entourage of 14-year-olds. Williamson claims that Elvis was a fan of tickling and wrestling, along with everything else short of actual intercourse. His future wife, Priscilla, was 14 when she met the 24-year-old Elvis. Just what went on behind closed doors during that time is still debated. What's not debated is the fact that after Lisa Marie was born, Elvis lost interest in Priscilla. Instead, he began to court yet another 14-year-old girl. In the early 1960s, few musicians were more respected than Phil Spector. Between 1962 and 1966, Spector established himself as the finest superproducer of his generation, crafting countless hits and pioneering a style of instrumentation that became known as the Wall of Sound. His production gave listeners some of the definitive songs of the era, such as the Ronettes' Be My Baby, the Righteous Brothers' You've Lost That Lovin' Feelin', and Ike and Tina Turner's River Deep, Mountain High. But Spector also earned a reputation for his erratic behavior, including allegations that Spector had used a gun to threaten musicians in multiple recording sessions. There were also revelations of abuse from his former wife, Ronette star Ronnie Spector, who recalled that her husband repeatedly threatened to kill her. He even installed a coffin in the basement of their compound to prove his threats were real. Then, in February 2003, the body of 40-year-old model Lana Clarkson was discovered at Spector's home. Spector was arrested for her murder. After trial, appeal, and subsequent retrial, he was sentenced to 19 years to life in prison. Spector died in January 2021 at the age of 81. Sean Combs is a megastar in the world of hip-hop. Not only did he score 5 number one hits on the Billboard charts, but he's also a hugely successful entrepreneur, with Forbes reporting that he made $90 million in 2022 alone. Combs' career came crashing down in November 2023, however, when he was slapped with a lawsuit in federal court by his former long-term girlfriend Cassandra Ventura. She accused Combs of years of rape, physical abuse, coercion, and sex trafficking. The suit was quickly settled, but Combs' legal troubles continued to stack up until September 2024, when he was indicted and arrested on charges related to racketeering, sex trafficking, and other crimes.
The new allegations against John Diddy Combs, a music producer, is accusing hip-hop mogul of sexually assaulting him.
More accusers came forward in the following months, alleging that Combs had raped, assaulted, abused, threatened, or harassed them. Combs has been repeatedly denied bail. He's currently awaiting trial in federal custody. If convicted, he faces a possibility of life in prison. In 2012, Lost Prophets singer Ian Watkins was taken into police custody along with two women aged 22 and 24. Watkins was charged with a litany of truly horrific crimes, which included possession, creation, and distribution of child sex abuse images, the sexual assault of two children, and charges related to animal abuse. Watkins' defense team initially suggested that the singer would maintain his innocence in court, but he later pleaded guilty to 13 charges. He received a 29-year prison sentence plus 6 on parole. The two women, who were the mothers of the underage victims, each received prison sentences of over 10 years. The presiding judge in the case, Justice Royce, stated in court that the Watkins case had plunged into new depths of depravity, while prosecutors in the case described his actions as incomprehensible and appalling.
This investigation has uncovered the most shocking and harrowing child abuse evidence I've ever seen.
Rick James has enjoyed a truly stellar career, from his years working as a Motown hit writer, his stint as a successful live act, and his huge smash hit Super Freak, which made him world famous in 1981. By the 1990s, however, James's career had fallen apart due to a much-publicized addiction to cocaine, which affected his live performances and led to erratic behavior in his personal life. But while James's addiction wasn't exactly exceptional in an industry rife with drug use, the crimes he committed certainly were. In 1993, James went to trial along with his then-girlfriend, accused of kidnapping and repeatedly beating a woman who had come to their hotel for a business meeting. The woman testified that she had also been tied up and burned by the pair, an allegation that amounts to torture. If found guilty, James could have faced a life sentence. In the end, though, he was exonerated of the torture charges. Instead, he was found guilty of assault, false imprisonment, and drug offenses and sentenced to 5 years in prison. He served just over 2 years after exhibiting good behavior behind bars. There's an old anecdote about British musician Ian Dury's drunken antics, one that basically sums up everything about him. Disabled in one arm and one leg by a childhood brush with polio, Dury liked to get drunk and insult the biggest, meanest, nastiest guy in any given pub, just to see if they would fight a person with a disability. Sometimes they would, and Dury's bandmates would step in and finish the fight for him. Since it often ended in a beating for the band members, sticking up for drunken Dury became known as Dury Duty. Dury's acid tongue wounded more than just random bruisers in various London pubs, however. According to his son, Baxter, Dury was like a Polaris missile, able to lock onto anyone's weakness in seconds and verbally destroy them. This would be dished out whenever he drank. He would hurt family, friends, children, or whoever happened to wander into sight.
If you have to ask what a rhythm stick is, then it may be possible that you will never know the answer.
It's also worth knowing that Dury wasn't exactly a conventional father. Most notably, he once left a teenage Baxter in the care of a violent drug addict known as the Sulfate Strangler for 3 whole years. Baxter and the Strangler actually became close friends, but that doesn't change the fact that this was a truly horrible idea. Spade Cooley was born in 1910, so you get a pass if you're not too familiar with his name. He was huge in the 1950s, though. He once declared that he was the king of Western swing, led a 30-piece band, hosted his own TV show, and made appearances in more than 50 movies. He even got a star on Hollywood Boulevard. Chances are, though, more people might have learned about him had his career not been derailed by alcohol, pills, jealousy, and murder. It all began when Cooley filed for divorce with his second wife, Ella Mae Evans. For a while, relations between the two improved, and it seemed like they were on the verge of getting back together. But then, on April 3, 1961, Cooley killed his ex-wife. It gets worse, too. Not only was the murder shockingly violent, but he committed it in front of their 14-year-old daughter, Melody.
He also reportedly put a cigarette out on Evans to make sure she was dead, and sat around in bloody clothes for a few hours before finally calling someone. Melody's testimony led to Cooley's conviction, and he was ultimately sentenced to life in prison. He was actually up for parole in 1970, but died backstage in 1969 after being granted permission to perform at a charity concert. You might not recognize Peter McNeil's name, but you probably know some of the artists he worked with over the years. He was a drummer in the 90s rock band Cake for a few years in the early 2000s, and he also drummed for Norah Jones at one point. Nowadays, though, he's most known for the horrific crimes he committed against children. The details don't bear repeating, but McNeil's crimes were numerous and shocking. After being arrested and sent to trial, he was sentenced to 15 years to life and incarcerated in a prison in California. He was also made to permanently register as a sex offender. Jerry Lee Lewis changed the face of rock and roll. He helped shape decades worth of music, and he has a very dark side indeed. The Guardian interviewed him in 2015 and said it's almost impossible to figure out what's true and what's legend, including the circumstances around his nickname, The Killer. The story Lewis tells is that a friend just called him that one day for no discernible reason, but it's also possible it came after he tried to strangle and kill one of his teachers, an act he fully admits to having committed. Lewis has also had 7 wives, and 2 died mysteriously, one by drowning and one by overdose. The latter incident went to court, where Lewis was ultimately cleared of wrongdoing. But the law was not on his side after he shot his bass player in the chest and had to pay out $125,000. Lewis's most infamous marriage was that of his own cousin's daughter, Myra, who was just 13 years old when they were married. You can't get much bigger than the Metropolitan Opera, and for more than 40 years, conductor James Levine was at the very top of it. He sported such titles as Director Emeritus and worked with the company's Young Artist Program as Artistic Director. In 2018, however, it was announced that the Met was officially ending its association with Levine amid accusations of sexual abuse and harassing conduct. Not a lot of details were released at the time. The Met's investigation involved interviews with 70 people and ended with an official statement saying, "The investigation also uncovered credible evidence that Mr. Levine engaged in sexually abusive and harassing conduct towards vulnerable artists in the early stages of their careers, over whom Mr. Levine had authority."
Well, he's like, we have to improve your bow arm, or we have to improve your sense of rhythm, and I can't understand you musically unless I understand you sexually.
Levine didn't comment on his firing at the time, which came after a December 2017 suspension prompted by 4 men who came forward to say that they had been targeted by the conductor as teenagers. Levine denied the accusations then, but it soon became clear that rumors of his abuses stretched back as far as the 1960s, when Levine was working at Oakland University's Meadowbrook School of Music. After these accusations became known to the general public, one of his accusers was quoted as saying, "The truth can be very useful. The truth creates good." If ever there was a human being who embodied the spirit of music, it would be Miles Davis. The jazz icon was one of the true greats of his genre, but he also carried with him a seriously troubled reputation. Davis's issues range from weird to horrifying. First, you've got the fact that he used to play with his back to his fans, and God help anyone who was brazen enough to approach him. There was also his vanity, which was so pronounced that he condemned music critics for singing the praises of anyone else, claiming that they were just out to take away his spotlight. Then there was his heroin and cocaine addictions, stories of pimping, and his abusive relationships with the women he married. Ex-wife Frances Davis has claimed that she wasn't just terrified of him, she actually ran away on multiple occasions, convinced he was going to kill her. Miles Davis even admitted to attacking his wives in his autobiography, and also proudly expressed his approval of other men hitting their wives and girlfriends, too. Nobody in the modern music industry is as capable of voicing controversial opinions quite so loudly as Morrissey. In 2007, he sat down for an interview with NME in which he lamented what he saw as the death of Britishness. While Morrissey denied being either xenophobic or racist, he was still quoted as saying, "Although I don't have anything against people from other countries, the price of immigration is enormous. Travel to England and you have no idea where you are." 3 years later, The Guardian ran an interview with Morrissey, a staunch vegetarian who went on record condemning the animal rights abuses going on in China. He then continued, "You can't help but feel that the Chinese are a subspecies." Then, when the Harvey Weinstein scandal broke, Morrissey had this to say, "I hate sexual situations that are forced on someone, but in many cases, one looks at the circumstances and thinks that the person who is considered a victim is merely disappointed." In fact, Morrissey has targeted so many people that Rolling Stone once published a roundup of all his most controversial opinions. The highlights include blaming Kate Middleton for the suicide of a nurse, shrugging off a massacre that left 77 people dead as nothing compared to what happens at McDonald's every day, and calling for Elton John's head to be served to him on a plate. In 2016, James Brown's daughter, Yamma, released her memoir, Cold Sweat, My Father, James Brown, and Me. It is a heartbreaking cautionary tale of a girl who grew up in a family where domestic abuse was the norm, who ended up in an abusive marriage of her own.
You are traumatized by it, but it becomes your truth and your reality that maybe mom is there, she really loves him, maybe this is what love is all about.
Yama says that even though Brown never turned on her, she grew up terrified that he would. She described a number of incidents, including one of which she wrote, "Blood spurted from my mother's face. She started thrashing around, kicking her legs, holding up her arms to ward off the punches and trying to break free, trying to save herself." Many of these incidents became public knowledge. In 2004, Rolling Stone reported Brown was arrested for shoving then-wife Tommy Rae Brown and sending her to the hospital. Brown also fathered an indeterminate number of illegitimate and unacknowledged children. After his death, forgotten sons and daughters began coming forward with DNA proof that they were Brown's kids. Brown even found himself at the heart of a change in legislature. In 2005, Jacques Hollander came forward and accused Brown of a 1998 rape, but the case was refused because of the time that had elapsed since the attack. The law was subsequently changed to give victims more time to report a crime, a result that Hollander was happy with. Alexander Scriabin was a Russian composer who was born on Christmas Day. He eventually came to see that as just one more piece of evidence that he was, in fact, the Messiah. Scriabin was brilliant, but troubled. For example, his hands were too small for him to play certain piano pieces, so he practiced until they broke and kept practicing until the bones stretched enough that he could reach the keys. After he became interested in religious philosophy and the occult, Scriabin grew more and more convinced he was destined to change the world, mostly by bringing about the end times. He started writing a huge composition called The Mysterium, which he envisioned as a work of music, dance, choreographed performances, and incense, and more than a few bells, too. The goal was to stage the entire 7-day performance in the Himalayan mountains, then kick open the door to the end of days and wipe out humanity. Sadly, Scriabin's plans were thwarted when he cut himself shaving and died of an infection. Chetham School of Music is a prestigious school in Manchester, England, and until 1994, the director of music there was Michael Brewer. An acclaimed singer and chorister, Brewster was also the director of the National Youth Choir and was even awarded an OBE for his services to music. In 2013, however, he was imprisoned for sexual abuse. It began for Frances Andrade when she was just 14 years old. Brewer was her teacher and repeatedly assaulted her between 1978 and 1982. Brewer's then-wife Hillary was also involved in the assault and was arrested, charged, and convicted separately. None of this came to light until years later, and when it did, law enforcement stumbled into other complaints that had been covered up, including an affair with a 17-year-old student. Andrade testified during a trial at Manchester Crown Court, but several of the charges against Brewer and his ex-wife were dropped mid-trial. Only 6 days after hearing that news, Andrade died by suicide. Her son reportedly blamed not only Brewer, but his defense counsel, too, for taking the route of calling his mother a liar and a fantasist during the trial.
She tried so hard to keep a straight face in front of the jury, to try to seem strong for them, but it was extremely hard on her.
In terms of musical significance, no one has had such an impact on R&B as R. Kelly. Unfortunately, R. Kelly is also a man who has reportedly committed a number of crimes and abuses against women and young girls. For 25 years now, Kelly has been well known for abusing and harassing women and grooming teenage girls. These reports have been so unrelenting, in fact, that Lifetime was able to dedicate 6 whole hours for its harrowing documentary series, Surviving R. Kelly. Perhaps one of the worst accusations is that Kelly held a number of teenage girls, some as young as 14, in a demented sex cult, groomed them, and abused them. Following the broadcast of Surviving R. Kelly, Chicago and Atlanta prosecutors opened new investigations into the singer. And in 2021, he was tried and convicted on 9 counts, including kidnapping, racketeering, and sex trafficking. Before he became famous as Tina Turner's husband, Ike Turner was known for being one of a handful of people who could claim to have invented rock and roll. After he married Tina, Ike became more well-known for being one of the most abusive husbands in showbiz. Tina once wrote that their lives together were defined by abuse and fear. To begin with, Ike took Tina to a brothel on their wedding night. He routinely did cocaine and then had sex with her in such a brutal way that Tina admitted it felt more like assault. He sometimes beat her, at various times breaking her nose and jaw, and gave her 2 black eyes and leaving her with third-degree burns after hurling hot coffee in her face. And at one moment in her autobiography, I, Tina, the star writes with shocking frankness about tasting blood from a beating as she sang on stage. There are also rumors that Ike threatened to kill Tina, shot bullets into her house after they split up, and once drove her to attempt suicide. When asked about it in a Spin magazine interview, Ike said, "I didn't hit her any more than the average guy beats his wife." In the post-Me Too era, it has become quite clear how far the rich and powerful will frequently go to silence their accusers. That may be why, despite an all-out assault by the Jackson estate calling its subjects' credibility into account, the documentary Leaving Neverland has actually made it to TV. This four-hour film features detailed interviews with two men who say they survived persistent abuse at the hands of Michael Jackson as children. Leaving Neverland slowly builds an effective, methodical case with so many damning details that many have found its accusations difficult to question. Not that others haven't tried, though. The two accusers, Wade Robson and James Safechuck, had previously defended Jackson at his trial and later lost the civil suit against the estate for abuse allegations. Jackson's estate says this shows their story is motivated by greed. Robson and Safechuck now credibly allege that Jackson groomed them as children, molested them, forced them to perform sex acts on him, and even staged a mock wedding. All the while, Jackson threatened them with prison if they ever told a soul.
Though he died in 1949, the influence of blues pioneer Leadbelly lives on. George Harrison once said, "No Leadbelly, no Beatles." And without him, rock and roll as we know it may never have existed. Still, Leadbelly was a bad man. Born Huddy Leadbetter in 1888, he did several stretches in jail, starting with 30 days on a chain gang in 1915 for getting in a particularly violent fight. 2 years later, he was arrested again, this time for killing his cousin's husband and nearly killing another. He was pardoned in 1925, but went back to jail in 1930, this time for stabbing what Black history now says was assault with intent to murder. It was during this stint that he was discovered by a pair of musicologists who were recording songs for the Smithsonian, and Leadbelly recorded hundreds for them. The rest of his life was a combination of performing at venues of all sizes across the country and more time in jail. There was another stabbing incident in 1939, assault in 1940, you get the picture. He was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease only months before he died from it, leaving behind a very dark and complicated legacy.
Johnny Paycheck was known as something of a country music outlaw, as his entire career was colored by drug and alcohol use. His difficulty staying out of trouble started way before he was a star, though, and when he was still a teenager, he enlisted in the U.S. Navy, punched a superior officer, and spent a few years in prison. The record deal came after that, and so did the check forgery and the attempted murder.
Johnny Paycheck, one of the outlaws of country music, is now singing the blues behind bars.
Paycheck was on his way home for the holidays in December 1985 when he stopped off at a Hillsboro, Ohio bar for a drink. He was recognized by a local named Larry Wise. They got to chatting and no one's entirely sure what happened next. Whatever offenses were caused, it ended with Paycheck grazing Wise's head with a bullet, and he'd later testify the music legend had, quote, "blowed my hat off." The case dragged on and Paycheck was sentenced again. Chuck Berry was a legend who helped shape rock and roll. He also once punched Keith Richards in the mouth, and what could Richards have done to deserve that?
His guitar was laid out in his case, and I went, "Oh, come on, Keith, you know, just a touch."
Berry's attitude got him into all kinds of trouble, and he even had a name for those incidents, his naughties. It started when, as a teenager, he did 3 years in a reform school for stealing cars and a bit of armed robbery. Fast forward to 1962, when Berry was 36 years old. He was tossed in the clink for violating the Mann Act, a law that prohibits taking a woman across state lines with immoral intentions. Oh, and she was 14.
Berry, you were under arrest for transporting a minor across state lines
I didn't solicit anything.
That's not all. In December 1989, Berry was accused of videotaping women in the not-so-private privacy of the bathroom of one of Berry's restaurants. The following June, his property was raided, with law enforcement finding weapons, pot, and the videotapes in question, placing him at the center of a class-action lawsuit. Berry's camp eventually settled, but that seriously tarnished his legacy. Brian Jones died not long after the Rolling Stones had made the decision to move on without him. It wasn't a surprising choice. Jones made Keith Richards look like the one you'd choose to bring home to meet your parents. There were, of course, the drugs and the pills, but his troubles started long before that. How long? He was kicked out of his grammar school for inciting rebellion, and it sort of spiraled from there. In public, he got in the face of anyone who didn't understand their music, and behind closed doors, he had a violent streak a mile wide. Anita Pallenberg was one of the original muses for the Stones, and she'd eventually go on to have a long-term relationship with Richards. But she started out with Jones, and Rolling Stone magazine says it was an abusive relationship that ended when he hit her so hard he broke his hand on her face.
It ended up very badly, because by then Brian had become very abusive and very kind of envious, and Keith couldn't bear the way Brian treated me.
Sympathy for the devil indeed. Even people completely unfamiliar with classical music know the work of Wagner. Wagner died in 1883, decades before the rise of Hitler and his Nazis. That means he wasn't around to see his music heralded as the soundtrack of the rise of anti-Semitism, but he probably wouldn't have hated the association. Wagner wrote a ton of jaw-dropping hate, including the idea Jews could only mimic art they'd seen and heard. When he struggled as an up-and-coming composer, he even blamed Jewish critics for keeping him from success. Frank Sinatra was iconic on stage, but there was a lot of shady stuff that happened off stage. According to The Telegraph, his temper was so bad that one of his wives once described him as a sort of Jekyll and Hyde character. And there's a whole list of physical altercations he was involved in. First, the ones where someone got seriously hurt. According to legends about the man who did things his way, he punched a reporter in 1948, but eventually settled the assault and battery charges filed against him. In an unrelated incident, he threw a phone at a random businessman who was staying at the Beverly Hills Hotel and cracked the man's skull. Keeping with the theme of throwing things, he nearly killed then-wife Ava Gardner by throwing a champagne bottle at her so hard it cracked the bathroom sink. Sinatra destroyed an insane amount of stuff too, usually in fits of rage. Further legends say that he took a knife to a friend's Norman Rockwell painting, threw a malfunctioning TV out of a window at the Sands Hotel, and smashed a car radio when the Doors' Light My Fire came on. So he must have really loved it when his daughter Nancy covered the song on her 1969 album. Not a gentleman, to say the least.
If you or anyone you know has been a victim of sexual assault, visit the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network website or contact RAIN's National Helpline at 1-800-656-HOPE-4673.